Part two of Dialogue Conspiracy, which is in its 85th week. I don't know, I've lost track, but it's somewhere in the mid 80s now. A weekly program, 1 hour's, 1 hour in length. And it deals with current events as they relate to past events and how they might influence future events. Politics, and politics touches every part of everybody's life, so it really touches life. Conspiracy, Dialogue Conspiracy, because May is of the opinion that there are a few of them working that are influencing our lives, a little, maybe even a little more than democratic actions. I hope I haven't misled
No.
What the pattern of the show is. May, you were saying you were going to list other people.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, Bray was talking about conspiracies and what is the pattern of these people that are getting ripped off, and who's being ripped off, and how many, and what is the connecting link, you know, because he was beginning to feel less secure, maybe because of his victory in the courts, you know, up there, that he wasn't going to be around long. There was something in the air, the atmosphere, that he was curious about the kind of conspiracies I was talking about. And
did he actually say he was going to be murdered? Or?
Oh, he was shot at just a couple months ago. Yeah. He and Shelley were shot at just not long ago before this happened. And he's hassled all the time. Yeah, it isn't very comfortable to fight the system and survive. Even Senator Proxmire got death threats recently about the Lockheed loans, if they went into that, you know, that his life was threatened. But there was an excellent article, two articles that pertain to the war coming home, and this has to do with people like Brady and others who are beginning to speak up about the injustices in our society. They were in Computer and Automation, February 1972, on the CIA. And the articles, one is by Fred Bramfman and Steve Cohn, and they talk about the CIA operations that are spreading out all over the world, from Bolivia, Congo, Iran, to Vietnam, that are coming home now, and that the U.S. government is going to be the recipient of this secret army, their recruits and their supplies. And they refer to a book by Marchetti, who worked with the CIA for many, many years and has given up that job, walked in one day and said, "Richard Helms, I can't do it anymore." Marchetti talked about assassins and killers in every corner of the globe. And in his book, The Rope Dancer, he talks about the agency. And he says, and this CIA agency is coming home, and it's increasing power here at home. When he sits with the men and hears them talk, he realizes that they're going to turn on the Americans and do what they did in Asia. And another article, the same issue of Computer and Automation, February 72, on the Central Intelligence Agency, $6 billion a year, goes into an interview that Marchetti, Victor Marchetti, had with the UPI in October of 1971, where he said the agency is perceived to be amoral, and it's filled with military influence, waste, and duplicity. But he says right now they're coming home to the domestic operations, the student groups, the black movements, and the like. And he goes on to say how dangerous it is to have them moving home onto America, that as the war winds down and they need new enemies and people are speaking up about oppression or indignities in this country, that the CIA will move on us. And he goes on, Marchetti said that it is a private tool of the White House. Now we see the team that the Watergate has been exposing, Mr. Segretti, who's at Fort Ord, who's really Army intelligence, and moves right from Fort Ord to the White House and flies east and back and forth on our west coast of the Fort Ord area, just blocks from where Brady Avery worked. You have a whole nest of central intelligence agencies watching radicals. I'm just posing the question, how safe is someone like Brady in a community there where he's talking about oppressions? And Marchetti says the nature of intelligence is you do things because they have to be done, whether it's right or wrong. And if you murder, he goes on, then you murder. And the big concern was that fake airlines would bring in weapons that they have a stockpile all over, and they'd use them against Americans themselves. And Marchetti's big concern was that the war is coming into America, and he couldn't stand that against the black radicals. So
are you saying that the CIA
as it
has a philosophy that whatever it takes should be done in order to accomplish whatever goal they have?
Yes.
Outside of law?
Oh, yes.
Outside of the Constitution?
Well, that's common knowledge. They don't have any boundary of law. They're completely patriotic in terms of their definition of patriotism. No, they have carte blanche to murder anybody.
Controlled by anyone in particular?
Well, they get their instructions, I guess, from the National Security Council, but the point is that they are after the black radicals, and Brady Avery was a black radical. And you have to watch. Once again, he's just one more person to be felled by a weapon to die from a particular group that's speaking up.
Who's giving the orders?
Well, I'm sure that a lot of people who do not want blacks to object to being kicked out of a area, you know, where they want an all-white group in Sand City, they're going to get it. And whoever would want to get rid of a person speaking of the injustices or winning a case in court, they could arrange to have that taken care of. You see, this is a bad precedent for him to win in court, because as soon as other people begin to learn to study the law books, that was said at Brady's funeral very eloquently, when you begin to study your law books and take your destiny in your own hands, then the balance of power begins tilting back to the other side. And
are you suggesting that the CIA was involved in Brady's death?
As long as the time allows, I'm going to read off a few other deaths that have occurred, and I'm suggesting that an awful lot is happening. Maybe you don't realize how many people who think like Brady are being felled down, and something is happening, because they're just, you know, these are just recent articles I pulled out because I was coming in today and wanted to talk about this.
Okay,
here's an article on the death of Raymond Yellow Thunder. This was March 6th in 1972, March 9th, an Indian in Nebraska, a part of the American Indian Movement, and the leaders met, and the Indians claimed that he was tortured and castrated and attacked by the Legion, and his death became...
The Legion?
The Legion Hall. I'm sorry, the Legion Hall. Smith, he was taken there. This Indian leader was active. Yellow Thunder's body was taken and found later, and it was taken to the American Legion Hall, where he was made to dance, and they stripped him down, castrated him, so forth. And the Indian, he was active in Indian organizations. This was in March 9th, 1972. Alcatraz Militant in October of this year was 21st. We didn't have time to talk about that. We were busy on the Watergate. Richard Oakes, he was attacked once before and had a plate in his head. And at the time, I wanted to go up to see him, but he was too sick. Then he went away for a while. Richard Oakes was the leader of the Indian invasion of Alcatraz. And he was killed in what they called an altercation on a road. He was shot. And only weeks before, he was busy actively organizing in Indian fairs again. He was active in Indian fairs. He was critically injured in January 71, and this time he was killed for good. A professor, September the 21st, 1972, Wolfgang Friedman, a man who came from Nazi Germany, who was a judge there, who was against the stormtroopers, he was killed in New York City. He was an author. He worked on legal foreign investments, and he was strongly anti-Nazi. He worked in international law, and he was just recently killed. He was stabbed and in New York City and slain. No more found on that. In Boston, Joseph Strickland, a teacher at Harvard University, assistant dean at Harvard University, nominated for Pulitzer Prize. This was in October of this year, of 1924. From the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences at Harvard, he was stabbed in evidently no motive. Somebody seemed to know him. had been in his place. He was found dead in a bathtub. He was important politically. He wasn't just a Harvard professor. He covered the Detroit riots and wrote books about them in 1967. And he got an award for exposing living conditions among migrant workers in Detroit. And this gentleman also was instrumental in finding persons involved in that famous Algiers Motel murder that John Hershey wrote about during the Detroit riots. Detectives were questioning a number of acquaintances of the dead man because he was instrumental in locating a key witness in the killing of three people at the Algiers Motel. That professor from Harvard was murdered. Here's a story at the time of Angela Davis's trial. This is August of this year, up at Santa Clara County. A man said he was offered $1,000 to stage a jailbreak so that the jury would be influenced. And another man named Mr. Zitzer, Jacob Zitzer, was in the infirmary on sick call. He went out. He was shot on the street by the same people that wanted to influence a jury for Angela Davis. I'm talking about cold-blooded murders for political effect. Here's the story of two hired assassins that killed James Carr at the same time the Angela Davis trial was going on. James Carr was a friend of George Jackson's. He was out of jail. He was working at Santa Cruz at university teaching about the inequalities of the prison system, helping people to better themselves, an intelligent black person working in the system to teach and get himself ahead. He was killed just at the time of the Angela Davis trial. And his brother-in-law, Tackwood, that we talk about all the time, Lewis Tackwood, had said that there was a plan down the LAPD to kill James Carr. His brother-in-law was killed, but he was killed to affect Angela's jury. Here's another, this was at the time Martin Luther King's brother was found floating at a swimming pool late at night. Nobody saw him, no evidence of foul play, and the Reverend A.D. Williams King, the only brother of the slain civil rights leader. Fred Jones this year in May, regional educational chairman of NAACP, was found stabbed to death in his luxury apartment in New York. Detectives discounted burglary as a motive for the slaying. Fred Jones, regional educational chairman of the NAACP. The story to kill Chavez this year, that came out. This was in January of this year. This was from the Treasury Department, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. The people that we're learning about, the Watergate, these men, Howard Hunt, 22 years with the CIA from the Treasury Department, said Segretti told a friend of his, Shipley, another lawyer from Tennessee, I'm paid by the Treasury Department. He's in an espionage, unlimited funds. And here was a plot to kill Chavez that was blown only because they were supposed to destroy union records before they killed Chavez. And at the time, I tried to call the people that work with Cesar Chavez because, see, Phil, what they do, they destroy the evidence to make it look like a robbery, but the intent is to kill Chavez. They said, you kill Chavez, this was the plan, but first you have to destroy the records up at Delano. They didn't want the records, but they destroyed them to make the motive look like it was a union thing. But the cold-blooded plan was to kill Chavez. See, the motive is always looks different, but the burning of the records was only to scramble the motive, you see. Here was a murder of a Mrs. Pratt, slain Black Panther Sandra Pratt in L.A., November, this is 71. She was found shot to death in Lynwood, and a week later she was identified as a defendant in a trial of the 13 Black Panthers. Nearly everyone connected with the Panthers considers Sandra to be murdered by police agents. A statement drawn by the Revolutionary People's Communication Network said that her murder was part of a continual plot to destroy the revolutionary black leadership in America. This attempt, the old divide-and-conquer tactic, is designed to create paranoia and set blacks to killing one another, to make the job of eliminating blacks and many other revolutionary people easier. See, this is the pattern with the James Carr thing. They tried to suggest Huey Newton was in on it. Here you have Brady Avery with a black son-in-law shooting him. I'm thinking when I talk about our own local community and the political position Brady had, and I look at maybe 100 or 200 other deaths that are in my filing cabinet, and I keep lists, I separate, you know, in my filing system, not every death that happens, but certain patterns that are taking place, like musicians, writers, colleges, judges. I classify them under different topics, like labor leaders, like Reuter and Yablonsky, or foreign leaders, or Panthers, or blacks that aren't Panthers, or Chicanos. and the mafia murders and the students and the family massacres. And there's a pattern, see, running through this that isn't any different than what Brady was doing at the time that he was shot. Here's a story about Kent State, where a man began to investigate Kent State. And the more he got into it, he was the father of one of the people killed. And the more he got into it, the more worse it was. And that's the way I started with the John Kennedy thing. The more I got into it, the worse he was. And he said he was determined to do something about this. So in June, he published a finding of 227-page report. And it charged that a half a dozen or so guardsmen agreed minutes before the shooting that a prearranged signal they would turn and fire upon students who they believed to be the leaders of the campus unrest. Hmm. And
it's kind of a heavy charge.
Oh, yes. There was much evidence. In fact, there was a replaying the shooting. Somebody had a cassette or recorder. They heard one shot go off as they believed a signal, and then the others. But John Mitchell, as the attorney general, said the case is closed. The family wanted to open up. They said the case is closed. The two student leaders that they wanted, Sandra Schuer and William Schroeder, were killed, and nine others were wounded. And the charge is that these targets were chosen by those guards. He wrote this up in a document. I got this article from Life magazine. He wanted to show that the system works, he said, by doing his research and giving them evidence, which is what I've tried to do in my work. And the system works with a shot in the back. It doesn't, or in the head. It doesn't work that way. And as soon as people, I don't know how many more murders will keep going along this line before somebody sits down finally and says, no, this isn't a coincidental script. Here's another one of a left-wing Italian publisher found dead after dynamite blast. This was just recently in March of this year.
Where'd that take place?
In Milan, Italy. A man found dead after dynamite blast at the foot of a power line. A leftist publisher. In Baton Rouge, there was a question where two deputy sheriffs and two young black demonstrators were killed in Louisiana. And the governor calls it useless and senseless. But always the leaders, the black leaders, are killed. Here's another article of April this year of Adam Clayton Powell by Roy Wilkins, who claimed that he had more to worry. It said, the Negro American who caused more white Americans more worry than any other single black individual is dead. Adam Clayton Powell. He had a brilliant career as a committee chairman and helped speed the reenactment of social legislation, including Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Well, Powell was put down as a drunk, a woman chaser. He was belittled. He was collecting evidence on the killing of Martin Luther King and the two Kennedys. And he had guards around him all the time because he thought his life was in danger. And he died. Suddenly he was flown over here with a cancer. And then there was another kidney thing. There were several discrepancies in the illness. And Adam Clayton Powell died this year. And he was a threat, too. He wasn't a radical in a clear-cut definition, but he was a threat to the American system. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, Rito Canales and Antonio Gordova of the Black Berets were going to discuss the prison situation in New Mexico. And one of them was charging the warden with assault and intent to kill. Antonio, who was beaten by the police in early June, had taken photographs of the cops at a particular beating. But they went to have a conference and discuss the prison problems. They never made it on television. The two men, both members of the Chicano community organizers that ran a free breakfast program, community clinic, and newspaper education classes, were shot to death by city police early Saturday morning, January 29th of this year. 12 hours after the murders, 30 cops raided the Albuquerque office of the Black Berets. It was ransacked. The cops said that they were cleared for justifiable homicide. Another one, George Randolph Fahrenthold. This is the stepson of millionaire stepson of the woman who ran for governor, Frances Fahrenthold from Texas, who was doing so well this year. In June 7th of this year, her son's neck was chained to a concrete block, gangland fashion, and he was bound by the neck and sent out to Corpus Christi Bay and sunk in the bay. The body, the chain around his neck, was tied to a 25-foot concrete block. This boy was not a radical. He had a fortune of $20 million, supposedly, estate. But his stepmother, his mother, was very active fighting the political system in Texas, working with the Chicanos, the Mexican-Americans, and almost had a chance to make a dent into that system. She's been working very hard, Sissy Fahrenholt in Texas. That's her son. Here's another one in the Jackson, Biloxi, Mississippi, in the dormitory where two blacks were killed, and the state shot them, and everyone was relieved of all charges. They were sued, and they were let go. Here's another one, an autopsy this is the Jimmy Carr one, riddled with 40 open wounds, 40 pellets of bullets. That was up in San Jose. Mexico City. The shattered body of General Vaquez Rojas was delivered to Mexico City. He was killed either in a high-speed auto crash or an army ambush, depending upon the sources. He was active in working for improvement of the area of the Mexican people in the guerrilla activity. He was shot, and that was in February of this year. A Guatemalan politician was assassinated, active in the National Liberation Movement. This was June of this year. I have many, these are current, most of these are just from this year, the kind of things that are taking place. People that are active in political movements are getting shot in the back. Here's another one in Santa Fe, New Mexico, a civil rights group. This was a different group. Roy Calgeos, 19-year-old of Santa Fe, was shot in the back of his head. He was active in the civil rights movement down in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they said, grand jury said, justifiable homicide. There was another one in El Paso, Texas. A slaying last Wednesday of a Colorado Mexican-American on the way to El Paso to attend the first national convention of La Raza. And the Lieutenant Governor Robert Mondragon of New Mexico wanted a federal investigation of the slaying of Robert Falcon, shot to death, active in La Raza. There.
You have a pile. You just keep going.
Well, I could go for 2 or 3 or 4 hours. You see, there is a pattern of slaying people active in civil rights movements. Here's a man, a hijacker, who supposedly protested to Nixon, he's from Vietnam. He was killed. He was supposed to be hijacking a plane. The plane wasn't hurt. He didn't take anything. He was conveniently killed. He had written to President Nixon to say that he was going to help the Vietnamese struggle for national liberation because the war was wrong. He's a South Vietnamese student, and he was killed. The list goes on. Here's Chile charges the CIA with killing the ex-vice president. A seditious plot was financed. They said this was in March of 1971, financed by the CIA. The techniques of the assassination is the operation of a group led by the CIA, that General Rene Schneider, Chile's army chief. They claim that the slaying of Pierre I can't pronounce his name.
You got me.
Okay. J-Z-U-J-O-V-I-C were carried out by a group of habitual delinquents in the service of the right wing and the CIA. Many countries overseas are accusing the CIA. Marchetti said they would come into the Philippines and take over. The Philippines has been overthrown since.
Okay. Well, you've shown, we just have a couple of minutes left, you've shown through those articles a lot of people are getting murdered. A lot of people who are involved in controversial political matters.
A wide range of them.
Do you want to take it one step beyond that and explain what the point of all that is?
Well, the point is that when a member of our own local community, who's the only black radical in the local community who's had the ability to speak up, run for public office, make himself known for what he believes in, is shot in the back by a shotgun, you have to watch the trial that comes up, you have to watch the atmosphere of the community, you have to ask yourself, is he one more of this long list of political assassinations? Is it a family quarrel, or is it a political thing? And we won't know for many, many years, maybe, how things evolve in this particular case. But I think it's important to know who's being ripped off and how they're being ripped off. And the warning signs we get from men like Victor Marchetti inside the agency that says they're coming home to do this to our community, then we have to look carefully at our own community and not talk just about Dallas or Memphis or Los Angeles where Kennedys or King were killed. We have to look at our local community and keep our eyes open and be objective and not emotional and evaluate how far the war is coming home, if it is coming home to our own community. Will we recognize it when it comes? Just be objective and not emotional, but be open to the fact that anything is possible as we move into the next period of bringing the war home.
Well, that's Dialogue Conspiracy for today. We invite anybody who has any questions or comments on programs. Your comments are always welcome. Send them to the address that we'll mention in a moment.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. If you have questions that you want answered on future programs, or any comments, write Dialogue Conspiracy, KLRB, Box 3904, Carmel, California, 93921. I'm Phil Kogan. Pre-recorded.